we're going to jump right into the Q&R. Is that okay? Just a friendly reminder, you can submit questions if you have some. Okay. And someone's generating those up here in real time to my phone because of space. So that is awesome. Okay, so I'm going to get started. You ready?
I'm ready. Hit you up
right away. Mm-hmm. Here was a really good question that was asked. How do we accept this new wine without damaging what we have created at Bridgetown so far? Did you guys hear the question?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think there's a different biblical metaphor that I think is helpful, and it's the one of, you know, Jesus as the foundation of the church, the people as living stones that build up the temple, that become the sanctuary for his presence. So I would just say this, like, let me answer it maybe abstractly and then extremely practically. In an abstract sense, we just have to make sure that we continue to always build on top of the foundation that has been laid here. And we do that by honoring the past and staying the course, you know. And then to speak really practically, I would just say, look, there's certain things about our church that just will never change because they're the identity given us by the Spirit. It's like the Spirit's work here. Those things would include, like, our mission and vision as a church. And this is not like a long, slow play to change the mission and vision of our church. Practicing the way of Jesus together in Portland is who we are and what we're about. Be with Jesus, become like Jesus, do what Jesus did is the way we understand how to do that. None of that is going anywhere. Even seasonally, you know, we've emphasized prayer, presence, and mission because we've been aware that we're in a new season as a church, and we kind of needed to give people language for that. But at some point in the future, that will dissolve into the nothing, and we'll just return to be with Jesus, become like Jesus, do what Jesus did. That's our mantra, and that's where we'll stay. Secondly, discipleship in community by practices is how we will continue to work out our vision always. So this church has been built on communities, and it's going to keep being built on communities. So there may be new wine, meaning new expressions and new emphases in terms of what God wants to do, but where will that get worked out? In communities by practices, because that is that's our charism. That's the way that we express what God does here. And then lastly, really, really practically, our friend John Mark is starting a ministry called Practicing the Way. And we will be one of the churches that helps give birth to that ministry to the broader church and is always a part of that ministry. I just cannot imagine a day coming when we're not running Practicing the Way courses here at Bridgetown. And what that will do is it will become the common foundation that people always kind of get. Those will be the fundamentals that people get as they become a part of this church family. So Bethany's figuring out what that looks like in a discipleship pathway. That's something we've talked about a lot. Like, what is our dream for a guest who comes in and then decides Bridgetown is my church home? And then what is the pathway they get plugged in so that they can kind of catch up to the story? Because there's a difference in, I came here 7 years ago and did the whole Practicing the Way journey, and now this is being added to that, and I came here 6 months ago, and I'm so excited about what God's doing here. So we want to continue to lay the common foundation, which is Practicing the Way of Jesus together in Portland. So we're really helped by the fact that what started in this church is becoming a ministry that we can continue to be a part of, and we need to figure out how that fits into the equation of this discipleship pathway. So hopefully that directly addresses that. I think we do all of those things. And of course, I think I have a responsibility to continue to honor the past and celebrate the past of what God has done here and remind people that it's what we're still about and what we're building on.
Great, yes. Next question. Any practical advice on reaching out to the marginalized? I'm coming from a place of being a small female, not feeling safe approaching a houseless person, if that's the ask. Is there a way to create resources for how to serve the marginalized? What does that mean or look like?
Yeah, that is not the ask. You know, my suggestion would be the starting place is to get involved in an organization that is proximate to the margins in one of the service opportunities that they have monthly. We've got a number of justice and mercy partners here as a church. We have a Justice and Mercy Fellow, J.T. Thomas, who's sitting right over there, that is intimately in touch with those partners. We have a team of Justice and Mercy deacons and a Racial Justice Committee that is connected to organizations like that. All of those are resources to you to creatively figure out, what does it look like for me to become proximate to and to begin practically serving in our city? So I would say, my honest suggestion, like if it ends up being like a total ad hoc thing for you, or if there's like an individual who's living houseless that you become friends with and that's how you express this, then that's totally fine, more power to you. But if you're asking me what was in my imagination, where do I start with this, I would say you find an organization that is doing good work in a sustainable way that you can trust, and you begin serving alongside people who have been doing this kind of work for a long time. And I think that is the best and wisest way that we can engage. So that would be my advice. And I would say start with the Justice and Mercy Partners of this church. Go to our website, check them out, go to their websites, look up the service opportunities, see how you can get involved. You wouldn't believe how easy it is to find service opportunities and to get FaceTime with people that can talk to you and help you figure out how to engage. When you go to places like this looking to volunteer. There are some organizations in our city that have been around for so long and have gained such a reputation that you're like fighting to get on the guest list to volunteer. But there's a whole lot of organizations that are doing incredible work all the time, and they're looking for people that will show up. And of course, whenever we volunteer, what you're doing is you're creating space for God to do kingdom work in relationship between you and others. Mm-hmm. So the end game here is not, oh good, I serve once a month at the soup kitchen. What you're doing by serving once a month at the soup kitchen is you're giving God space to do something new in you and through you. So I think you find a space that you can engage in. Monday nights, this works for me once a month, or maybe it's weekly for you or something, I don't know. And you show up prayerfully and expectantly. You begin to pay attention, to get to know people's names, to build relationships, and you see over time what God might do both in you and through you in that. So that's kind of the dream when it comes to that one. I know I was flying at the end because I was trying to get all the information across and to honor your time so everyone could go eat and chill and everything like that. Does that answer the question?
I think so.
Yeah, cool.
Great. I'm just going to keep rolling so that we can get to as many questions as we can. What are some tips for how to introduce a rule of life when you are emotionally drained from a job that requires a lot of your soul? It can feel overwhelming to add another thing to your life, especially when your vocation is highly relational and calls for so much emotional availability.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I would say this, a rule of life is not an additional thing to do. It's a thing that orders what you do and don't do. And so I think if you're busy, this is the container that you need to hold the busyness of your life within and to prioritize your life. A rule of life is about, it's about figuring out what fits and what doesn't fit. It's about figuring out what can I prioritize today so that 5 years from now I'm inching toward the person that God has created me to become. Mm-hmm. So this is not what a rule of life isn't is a new spiritual discipline, practice, or habit. What it is a container for holding the whole of your life. Those things that seem obviously categorized as spiritual and those things that seem secular. But the truth is that God is just as much in them. And then allowing you to connect all the gifts to the giver, as I was talking about. So the three-part rule of life that we've offered to you, which is not our idea, it was Jesus' idea. And then it was given some language by this guy Zinzendorf and his friends. And then we're kind of picking up from there, is a summary of what it means to follow Jesus. So this is not I'm not asking you to do new and additional things. You're a follower of Jesus. That's why you're here. That's why you're leading in our church. So I'm saying, what if we all followed Jesus in the same way where we didn't leave any obvious, massive gaping holes into what it means to walk behind this rabbi? And then you figure out how that works in your life, and you figure out how your life works around that. But our first vocation has to be disciples following behind a rabbi, and then everything else has to fit in that container, yes? So
yeah.
So that would be my honest suggestion. And then I think highly practically, if you're having trouble figuring out, how do I craft this? How do I begin to order my life? You mentioned that thing about revisiting it on Monday mornings and pray. If you're thinking those things, will you talk to anyone on our staff? Because it's a requirement as a part of the staff here to live by a rule of life. And so this is something that we regularly talk about, dialogue about, and revisit in our staff meetings. And everyone who's on staff at this church is regularly interacting with a rule of life. So you'll be talking to someone that has experience kind of trying to live this out. So if you're thinking about, you know, man, how do I start? Or can someone help me? I'm having trouble. I said yes to this and I really meant it, but then I just continued living the same way. Or how do I revisit this often enough that it becomes formative in my life? Or how do I keep from making this into a fitness plan? Because you said it isn't that. All those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. Then go to the person that you feel most comfortable with chatting on staff and ask those questions. They would be an amazing resource to you.
Yeah, that was part of the next question was, you know, can you share more about your rule of life or that of the staff, which we do have one, and then what fruit have we seen it produce? The other thing I just want to add to that, and I'll let you, if you want to say the fruit thing, you can, because I'm newer. I had a joke about fruit, but I'm not going to say it. But I will say that, you know, we are, because we've been working through this, because it's, you know, as leaders go, so goes the church. We've been really wrestling through what this looks like and how to be responsible and accountable to it. And so we have, like, I know some of you are more type A, so you'd want, like, what's the structure look like? Like, I know there are exact leaders on our staff who could send you a framework you could fill in if you were like, I'm looking for that, and less interested in the one that we produced years ago that was more complex. So, I mean, if you're looking for a simple framework, we even have that on hand because we've been functioning and doing it. So,
yeah, I would say, I want to be clear about this. I'm not asking you to craft your own rule of life. I'm saying, can we all live by the order of the mustard seed together? Mm-hmm. So if you want to have a conversation about, in addition to this, crafting your own rule of mm-hmm. life, then I'd be happy to share all that stuff, but I don't want to do so publicly in this moment because I don't want to dilute what I'm actually here talking about, what I'm calling you to, which is three things. You know, it is to be true to Christ, to be kind to all people, and to take the gospel to the world. And I think that's what we want to covenant to. And of course, there are additional things, and there's that you might want to prioritize in your rule of life if you are to craft your own. And if that feels like an invitation from the Spirit to you, then go for it. And I'll chat with you afterwards if you want to talk about that. Not because I'm afraid to share more about my rule of life or anything like that, but because I don't want to dilute the vision. I don't want to dilute the vision. It's the order of the mustard seed. That's the vision. That's what we're calling you to. And what fruit has rule of life produced in my life? I mean, Bethany, what fruit has rule of life produced in our staff? Mm-hmm. You know, we've been doing this for, how long have I been here? 7 or 8 months mm-hmm. in a particular way? So what fruit do you think it's produced in you or in our staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've had so many, when I think about the practices and all the work that we've done, it was a lot at once. I mean, it was over 5 years, but there was a lot to orient around. And I think what the rule of life has done for many of our staff is just bring a greater sense of freedom. Sometimes there's so much going on that you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing or where I'm supposed to start or how this is supposed to function. And what I think I'm seeing, I wouldn't even be able to speak to my fruit yet, I don't think, with a lot of authority. But I do think what it is producing in our staff is a sense of like order and freedom where they're able to just move, and faster is the wrong word, but move freely in the work that they're being called to do, because there's order. There's like a, and not order in the like controlling, you know, type A freak thing, but like, not that that's a freak thing, but control freak is what I was thinking, but I know what my rhythms are, and I know now how to give myself with joy in each of these spaces. So I think joy's been a byproduct. I think healing's been a byproduct of the frenetic sickness that we live in so often, I think there's just been a recentering of like, I don't have to live that way. And so there's been healing and liberation in that. And then just more clarity about what's the most important thing and really that he's the most important thing. So I think all of that has been true and what I'm seeing, at least from my team and in our staff and slowly in me. But yeah, I think that's some of the fruit.
And I just want to share a word of caution as well. If you were like, Tyler, do you think that I should leave here? And in addition to the order of mustard seed, craft a personal rule of life, I would say, no. I honestly don't think you should. But you totally can, because I'm not in charge of your life, so go for it. But I'm just trying to speak directly. And the reason for that is because for every personality type, a rule of life or the order of the mustard seed, which is what we're really talking about here, it's going to produce different challenges, right? So if you are more type A, more of a planner, you're going to want to plan more than this. But as someone that I identify with that to some degree, and I would just say, like, you're also someone that your intention often far outruns your follow through. And so you're going to want to add more. But look, if you haven't been regularly proximate to the poor, then that becoming a regular part of your life over the next 9 months would be a massive victory. So let's just get there, you know, and then figure out what comes next. And there's others of you that your personality is like, how dare you give me 3 things to do? You don't even know me. Who are you, bro? And if that's you, then I would say, like, the formation is, like, choosing to covenant into something with others and actually live in a common way, knowing that a day may come where you're living in a unique rule that's just yours. But let's do the common one first. Like, we got to go training wheels before we're just out there BMXing. I don't know. I went into a metaphor I wasn't ready for. But you know what I'm saying? Like, everyone's going to have a different growth edge here. So let's just covenant to this three-part rule of life. And if it was radical enough for the Moravian revival,
yeah,
then surely it's radical enough for us.
Yeah, great. Can we pivot a little bit and talk about sex?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, sexuality. It was a joke.
I was going to do the song.
Again, I'm trying to contain myself up here.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it because I talked about the Garden State thing?
Yeah, I think that's probably where this started, for sure. We all had a visual that we can't release. Yeah. I'm going to do 2 questions because they're kind of back-to-back with each other. The first is, and I'll let you just kind of broadly speak to it. The first question was, what discipleship pathway is there in the church for sexual wholeness in opposition of the cultural idols of sexual immorality? And then this is from another leader, when I think about the fear I have around orthodoxy, it usually centers around how we as Christians view sexuality. And so how do we as a church engage this conversation well while loving people?
Those are both great questions. They're outside of the purview of what I thought this Q&A was about, but yeah,
that's
here we go. I'm going to let you speak to the first one.
Okay.
Because you honestly, I mean, I can chime in if you want. You honestly probably have more clear information on that than I do. So, yeah, I would say I'll respond to the second one really fast. When it comes to orthodoxy, how do we articulate the biblical sexuality well? Is that essentially?
Yeah, and then how do we engage? You know, that we're holding to this orthodox view of sexuality, but how do we hold that? It seems to be the question, in tension with, like, loving people in real time.
Yeah.
And walking well in that.
Yeah, so, I mean, gosh, we could talk for hours about that. So let me just name some key ingredients, okay,
great,
to that conversation. The first is that there's whenever you express orthodoxy, and I'm using that not as code for something, I'm talking about what you believe. So whenever you express what you believe, there's always, particularly when it comes to an issue that, you know, people have feelings about that may be very personal, any issue in that category, then there's 2 things that really matter. The first is what you believe, but the second one, and often the more important one, and usually the question people are really asking if they ask, what is this church's belief on fill in the blank, is how do you express what you believe? Because the question is really, how am I going to feel, or how is my friend going to feel if I bring them in contact with your church? And how far in can they come to your church before you will make them feel a way I don't want them to feel, or they're not ready to feel? So I think that we always have to be articulating, number one, what we believe, but then secondly, how do we express that belief at Bridgetown Church? So to use sexuality as the example on this one, what do we believe the Bible teaches about sexuality? Because we need to be clear about this. Bridgetown Church doesn't have positions on things. Jesus has positions on things,
yeah.
And we follow Jesus. So what does the Bible teach? What does Jesus teach about sexuality? And then secondly, how do we express the teachings of Jesus in this time and place when it comes to sexuality? That is a key ingredient. I forgot what the next thing I was going to say. Huh? The culture thing that I do. The difference between agreement and acceptance? Yeah, maybe I was. maybe I was. Secondly, I would just... No, I remember. This is it. All right, so I've been talking in front of you guys quite a lot. I'm just, you know, it's getting fuzzy. So secondly, this is really, really important. I think a massive issue when it comes to the way that churches typically talk about sexuality is that they start pretty far downstream in the story, right? So I want to name a couple of things when it comes to how we articulate orthodoxy, when it comes to our bodies. We have to start with a theology of the body to get to sexuality, because we always answer sexuality questions from within a story. And so if you start with sexuality, but you don't first have the theology of the body, why were you created, what is your body for, and how is it used, which the scripture has a lot to say about, then it's almost as if you're saying, hey, watch this scene from this film. It's somewhere in the second half. And it's like, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because I don't know the film. And so we have to start from the beginning of the story. So I think there's a task coming for Bridgetown Church, which is to articulate a very clear theology of the body and to get to sexuality, not downstream, but at the beginning of the story, and to trace it throughout Scripture. The second thing I would say is this. Often when I hear sexuality talked about in the church, here's the trouble, is that no matter how you articulate it, at the end of the day, it doesn't sound like a better story. Right, the culture tells a story about sexuality that often sounds better than the one that the church tells. And that's a massive problem, because I actually think that Jesus tells the best and most liberating and most dignifying story about human sexuality that there is. So I think that as the church, and I'm mainly talking about myself here, as people that articulate sexuality in the church, we have to articulate Jesus' view on sexuality, one man, one woman in a marriage covenant, and we have to do so in a way that I think Jesus did that tells a better story about who we are, why we were made, what our bodies are for, and why using them according to God's design is actually the greatest and most abundant life. So I think that's really important when it comes to orthodoxy. Those are the different kind of ingredients that come to my mind. And I just want to say also that as an elder board, this is a question that we are wrestling with and tackling at the moment, and we're not in a hurry, because getting it right is far more important. Getting it right, expressing it right, than getting it done quickly. So we are working on it. We are not at all, when I say that, we're not at all reconsidering our position on holding to the orthodox teachings of the historic Christian faith. We're trying to figure out how we express that well in our time and place. And so we're working hard on that. We're going to keep working hard on that.
Great.
Question one.
Yeah, I'll hit that lightly. The question was, what discipleship pathway is there in the church for sexual wholeness in opposition to the cultural idols of sexual immorality? You know, one of the things that we have to be wise about, we're just stewarding this, leaning into this, pressing into this, the theology of the body and all of that. And we've been doing that the last few years in a more hidden way. And there's a couple of us who've been really doing a deep dive on that and really figuring out what would work for our community. Programs can be weird. When it comes to sexuality, it can be a really, you know that, this can be a really weird conversation for all of us. Like, how was your sex ed class? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying we're gonna do sex ed, we're not. But Well, maybe we will. I don't know. I'm kind of serious about that. But I do think that we've been looking for something, and we feel like God's brought something to us that we think is going to be really beautiful. And the thing is, it doesn't, just like what Tyler was saying, the emphasis is not on sexuality. It's on your humanity. It's on what it means to be a human, what it means to be created by God, and then how to live in a way that's free and as a good offering to Jesus and to one another. So we've got that coming down the pipeline. I can't speak to it too much more except to say that we're really working on a pathway for this kind of discipleship because we really believe it matters. If you know some of us, you know we really believe it matters. And God's done a lot in me through the, I've done the program, I'm doing it. God's done a lot in me, and I think it'll be a good gift to our community. We're just almost there, we're just not quite there, but it is a trajectory we're headed on and believe it's a really important part of discipleship and leadership here at Bridgetown. Okay.
Anything else in there?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm going to do one more because I think that's what we have time for, just one maybe. And then if you have any other questions, we're going to stick around after so you can ask us if you're like, I got to get, this is burning in me. It doesn't seem like it based on your questions, but anyway, how many you've submitted, but you know, you might have one inside that you want to ask. Here's the final question. Should we introduce this new wineskin model, Bridgetown as a church, as a revival church or whatever, and Rule of Life to our Bridgetown communities? And how? And if so, when or how much will they get to hear everything we've just heard you say? Or a shorter version, or this is quite the question.
Can you trim that content?
16 questions in one. Well done. That's my kind of person, whoever it is.
This is how I believe spiritual leadership works, is I think your hidden life is more powerful than your public life. I think power in public comes from the way that you live in the hidden place. So I think fruitfulness, the power of the Spirit, anything that happens in public Christian leadership, whether that means leading a community group or discipling a couple of folks or preaching from a stage, it all gets born quietly through prophetic living that no one sees. I honestly really believe that, that's where power comes from. And so, should you present it to your Bridgetown community? No. No, you should live it. You should live it quietly and humbly. You should live it into being. You should stoke the fires of holy jealousy. And when someone comes to you and says, seems like there's something different about you. How have you been living? Which, honestly, seems to only happen in sermon illustrations. So I don't know if it'll happen. Then sure, go ahead and tell them. You don't have to keep it a secret then. But I would say this, what we're dreaming about is, we're dreaming of being a church with a rule of life that lives at the center of it that people can covenant into. We're dreaming of being a church that's like a swimming pool that has a deep end, you know, so that we're inviting people deeper into this thing called discipleship with Jesus. And when do we do that? How do we do that? I don't know. I know that step one is inviting you guys to incarnate it and to live this. So I would say, will people hear us or me articulate the kind of stuff we've been talking about here? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it could, and it'll come in the form of a teaching series on a Sunday where we invite people to live into this as a whole, and we announce that, you know, there's this structure added to our church, and we're, you know, all that kind of stuff. Probably. That's what we're dreaming about. But I think what we're inviting you into is to incarnate this with us and to say, what if you just took this spiritual ground and then we see what God does with it and see, what if we come back here in 6 months and you're like, honestly, this isn't helping, like, this isn't producing great fruit in me. Then I think that would tell us a lot. But if we in 6 months said, wow, you know, like God's doing this in my life and these stories have come about, and then I think that that's a clear sign that there's some fruitfulness here and we should keep going. So this is how I understand spiritual leadership to work. It's what I call prophetic leadership. We talk about it as a staff all the time. It's that you as leaders in the church, you've got to get out ahead of the people in the church. I mean, you've got to be living now what you hope your community's living a year from now. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to be leading them into it by talking to them about it, showing it to them. You need to be leading them into it by living it, just live it. Just go and inhabit the land that you hope that they will live in. Scout it out. Know the wild. Then make it inhabitable for them to come into the land after you. That's what I'm inviting you to do. I'm inviting you to lead with your life and to take ground that we hope or dream that our church may all take. And yeah, that's what this weekend is about.